Maybe you work hard all day long, and when you come home, you'd just like to settle into a decent meal, but oh, you walk in the door and realize there's nothing ready to cook, you didn't defrost something, or some other complication. Well, there is that tub of leftovers. The term leftovers can make the blood run cold for some people, but we have an expert on hand with great experience in turning parts of old meals around into exciting new meals. Julia Tershin is the author of Now and Again, go-to recipes, inspired menus, and endless ideas for reinventing leftovers. Julia Tershin writes a lot about cooking and gets published in basically everything from Bon Appetit to the New York Times. She's also written or co-authored a pile of cookbooks, including Feed the Resistance and Small Victories, named one of the best cookbooks of 2016 by NPR. She's even done her own radio work as the host of the first two seasons of Radio Cherry Bomb. Julia Tershin, welcome.
Thank you so much for having me.
What is Radio Cherry Bomb?
Radio Cherry Bomb is a program on the Heritage Radio Network, which specializes in food programming, and it's run out of a shipping container in Bushwick, Brooklyn, and it's the radio show that goes with Cherry Bomb Magazine, which is an independent food magazine that features women in food, so that was a really fun thing to work on.
Your envelopment in food seems to be total. I mean, have you always been interested in food?
Yeah, I can't remember ever not being interested in food. I was one of those very, very lucky kids who knew, you know, where they were their happiest immediately. I've always been just, you know, so excited to be in the kitchen and thinking about it when I'm not in it. And, yeah, I've gotten to do what I love for my whole life, and I feel very grateful.
Do you think you were the only teenager ever to scribble menus in school notebooks?
You know, I felt kind of like I was, but these days with all these great programs on TV about kids cooking, I feel like there were probably other kids. I just didn't know about them.
you couldn't find a club together at that age.
Exactly.
Just the concept of the book was really interesting to us because, I don't know, the idea of repurposing, as my wife uses the term at our house, meals into new meals has always interested us. What did you set out to do here?
Sure, yeah. I mean, the book actually started as an idea to just do a book about reinventing leftovers because I love to do it, and I think that leftovers mean you've already done most of the hard work and you can just be creative and have fun and put things together. So I was just going to do that as a fun concept, and then I kept running into the problem of, you know, where does the food come from in the first place? So it became a much bigger and I think a much more useful book, and the book is organized by menus, broken down by season, and every menu has, you know, really simple recipes so you can make the whole meal. And then following each menu are, you know, these sort of endless ideas for ways to reinvent the leftovers. And the goal of all of that is sort of in three parts. And one is to kind of, you know, really make people excited about leftovers. Two is to make, you know, the idea of making a whole menu feel really doable, not intimidating, and, you know, take out any of the fear out of having people over, because I think gathering people in your home or, you know, in your kitchen or on your dining room table, to me, that's the best part of cooking.
And was there a third thing?
I guess that was number three, to bring everyone together. I sort of lost count. Thank you.
Oh, sure. So so the original title of the book, I think, as you planned it, was called It's Me Again, and this is the heading you use for the reinvention sections of the book, which are really interesting. Your approach to meals sounds generally like the anti-Thanksgiving, just in the sense that there's not a really central ooh-ah dish for any meal you serve.
Yeah, that's a really good observation. I think I'm really interested in meals that have, you know, a few different parts that all really complement each other, and, you know, no one is, you know, asking to steal the show necessarily. I think together they all, you know, make the show.
Okay, so let's get to a basic philosophy of food. I think you touched on a moment ago. It is not just about eating. This is not just about, you know, getting in your calories and keeping your body powered and all that stuff. It's much bigger.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I really believe, you know, because I've been interested in food my whole life and I've loved it so much, you know, it's been how I've narrated my whole life. And so, you know, all of my memories are informed by food. And, you know, sometimes I can't remember exactly where I was, but if I think about where I ate, you know, or what I ate, everything comes back to me. So I find food to be full of nostalgia and emotion, full of, you know, family and friends. And, yeah, I think it's very much... you know, it is what we eat, but it's so much more than that.
So let's talk down some of the people who might have been scared by the idea of menu planning, because as you mentioned, you want people to know that this is doable stuff. So how much prep and cook time are we talking for a lot of the ideas that you convey in the book?
Sure. Yeah. You know, the menus in the book range from, you know, just a, you know, a regular weeknight kind of dinner, you know, something you can get on the table and, you know, way less than an hour kind of thing, you know, to a full Thanksgiving menu, which I called a no stress Thanksgiving, because no matter the meal, you know, it's all very doable. So the time, you know, it ranges. And what's really nice is that before each and every menu, I put a timetable so you can do things as far ahead as you'd like. You know, if you want to make your brisket for Passover a month ahead and freeze it, that's fine. You know, you're a big step ahead. So the timetable is there to make you feel super comfortable. So if you're, you know, getting everything done in one afternoon, that's totally okay. If you want to work ahead, that works too. So all the information is there. But I would say for the most part, all the meals are pretty simple.
That's a really effective backtiming calendar that you provide there. And it's well marked for each of these meals to say, here are the things you can do, you know, 3 days in advance, the day in advance, the afternoon of, that kind of thing. So all sorts of detail in how to approach the process. So we're talking about making a decent meal up front and then taking the parts of that meal, if you have leftovers, and making them into something else again. And that's the It's Me Again part of the book, Now and Again, written by Julia Tertian with photographs by David Loftus. We'll come back and talk more with Julia, and maybe you can share some ideas for how to repurpose food at your house when we come back to the Jefferson Exchange in a minute 20. On the Jefferson Exchange on the News and Information Service of Jefferson Public Radio. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. We're talking to Julia Tertian, who has been cooking and writing about cooking for a very long time, since she was a child, really, and now has turned to something that maybe a lot of us can relate to, the idea of taking today's meal and turning it into something new and exciting for tomorrow. The book is called Now and Again, Go-To Recipes, Inspired Menus, and Endless Ideas for Reinventing Leftovers. You can join the conversation on the Exchange. Lots of questions potentially to ask here and lots of suggestions to make as well, perhaps from your own experience. Join us by phone at 800-838-3760 or send your emails to jx@jeffnet.org. It seems like one of the key features, though, is not just taking this stuff out of the fridge and sticking it in the microwave. This is really about turning things around and adding something to it, Julia.
Absolutely. You know, all the ideas for the reinventing leftovers really comes from, you know, my sort of feeling that the world can be divided into, I think, people who love leftovers and people who really despise them. And I think one goal of the book is to do as much as I can to convert those who really, you know, frown upon them, because I think, you know, there's nothing wrong with microwaving something, heating it up, eating cold pizza out of the fridge. I do those things all the time. But I think when you look at leftovers as this kind of invitation to be really creative, to reinvent something, turn it into something completely new, it becomes really exciting. And I just love it from the perspective of a home cook, which I am, because you've already done so much work, so it doesn't take much to make a whole new meal.
I wonder if you got much resistance from your publisher. It's like, I don't know, a book about leftovers, because they do, you know, that term does carry a fair amount of baggage.
Yeah, no, they were pretty supportive. So, yeah, too late for them now.
Absolutely. So yeah. The book is organized in seasons. So are we talking about as in preparing meals that include seasonal items or items available seasonally?
Yeah, absolutely. And I live in upstate New York, about a couple hours, you know, north of New York City. So
you're in Dutchess County?
I'm in Ulster County, really close by.
Oh, and my stepmother's not far from you.
Oh, how funny. Yeah, no, it seems like a lot of people have family and friends in this area. And, you know, but the food here, you know, I live in a really rural agricultural area, so I feel more in touch with the kind of, you know, Northeast seasons than I ever have, even though I've spent my whole life in New York. And, yeah, the food is very much dictated to, you know, seasonal kind of local produce, things like that. But I think also kind of just like the feelings of each season and, you know, the holidays that come in each season. And, you know, I think the winter chapter is full of really, you know, kind of like warm, hearty food. And, you know, the summer chapter has, you know, more stuff on the grill, that kind of stuff.
So we start with autumn. And what are some of the common threads in this season food-wise?
Sure, yeah. Well, autumn is, you know, I'm really looking forward to it because it's around the corner and it's my favorite time of year. I think maybe because I was someone who always loved school, so I was always really excited to get back to school. I was one of those unusual people. So yeah, the autumn chapter is full of some of my favorite stuff, and it's nice because some of the recipes include, you know, ingredients that are, you know, kind of like really good end of summer, beginning of fall ingredients. You know, a wine that has sliced plums in it for an Italian menu that includes a really delicious baked pasta. You know, and then as it gets a little cooler, there's actually a whole meal for Rosh Hashanah, which is a holiday I grew up celebrating, and it's a menu with all these sort of symbolic foods. You eat a lot of sweet things during that holiday, so there's a delicious chicken that's with sweet potatoes and dates, and a really simple beet salad with a poppy seed dressing. So it's really simple, but it's a little, you know, unusual and interesting, which is what I strive for in my recipes.
Now, one of the meals that you just mentioned is the Italian late lunch. Let's talk about that first. There's a great description of a similar meal you had with the friends Laura and Fabio.
Yes, yeah. So a little over 3 years ago, yeah, getting close to 4 years ago, my wife and I moved from New York City, where I spent most of my life, to, you know, the rural town that we live in. And we were introduced to this area by this couple, Laura and Fabio, who made a similar move themselves. And they've owned a property here that was an abandoned apple orchard. They brought it back to life. It took them, you know, over a decade to do that. And they had invited us over for this lunch that really just sticks out in my mind as one of my most memorable meals. And it was a beautiful day, and their dog ran around with our dog, and Laura's mother, her, you know, Nona, made us homemade pasta, and basically everything we ate, you know, they had grown, or, you know, it was found nearby. And it was just this kind of hyper-local, very special, very memorable, really easygoing meal. And the feeling of it really stayed with me. And I, you know, I just remember sitting there looking around thinking, oh, you know, our life could look like this if we wanted to. And yeah, we made the move soon afterwards.
We're talking to Julia Tershin about her book about repurposing leftovers in new and exciting ways, not just taking them out and warming them up, but turning them into new things. The book is called Now and Again. And I have to say, the photographs by David Loftus are gorgeous. It's, you know, it's proper food porn. But honestly, the picture I had the hardest time turning the page from was the Italian flag baked pasta from that Italian late lunch. What's in that?
Oh, yeah, it's such a great dish, and it's so easy to make, and I do appreciate you mentioning David, because he's a wonderful photographer and so great to work with. So the baked pasta is it's made with a really simple kind of meat sauce. I use ground turkey for it. That's something we eat a lot in my house, but you could use any kind of ground meat, you know, pork, beef, chicken, whatever you like. And, yeah, really simple canned tomatoes, a little fresh basil, and then a mixture of a frozen spinach mixed with a little bit of creme fraiche, which makes it really rich, and it's sort of my go-to substitute instead of making something like a bechamel sauce, mostly because I just don't want to dirty another pot. And if you don't have creme fraiche, you could use sour cream. And so you basically make this, you know, tomato meat sauce and layer it with pasta and then this kind of creamy spinach mixture, and you just bake it with some extra cheese on top, and it is so good. And it's, you know, got all the appeal of, you know, like a great lasagna with, you know, much less work.
I can't tell you how much relief that gives me to hear that somebody who is a regular cook like you will do the shortcut that I often take, where it's like, well, I could do this, but that'd dirty another pot.
Yeah, totally. I'm always thinking about, you know, how can I make something really delicious without doing many dishes? That is my goal.
How then, let's talk about the repurposing then of the Italian baked, the Italian flag baked pasta, what that turns into in its second incarnation, the It's Me Again incarnation.
Sure, yeah. Well, this dish is sort of funny because I thought this was one place, and I actually wrote this down, where you really don't need to reinvent it, because I love leftover pasta just as is. And one fun idea, which I tried once, is you can actually warm up a serving, actually in a waffle maker. It makes, you know, every single edge of it crispy and delicious, and it kind of melts that cheese, and it's so good. But I really only recommend that if you have a waffle maker with plates you can put in your dishwasher. Otherwise, it will never be clean.
Yeah, the kind you can take out and soak. Yeah,
okay. Yeah, consider yourself warned. but that spinach mixture that I mentioned with the creme fraiche and everything, that in and of itself is so simple, and it's so delicious. And I love piling that on a piece of grilled or toasted toasted bread that's just been rubbed with a little bit of garlic. So that's a good recommendation.
And also in that meal, the polenta and Nutella sandwich cookies. The Nutella got no problem with the polenta with it, though. How those flavors work together?
Yeah, it's almost kind of like an inverse Oreo. You make it's like a polenta shortbread, and you know polenta is just cornmeal, so it's a nice kind of crumbly shortbread, and it's got that kind of really nice sweetness that cornmeal has. You know, plus the texture. And yeah, you make these thin, you know, rounds, and then you sandwich them with Nutella, and they're so good. I love those cookies.
And can you tell us the story about Nutella and your college roommate?
Oh, sure. Yeah. So, yeah, I forgot I mentioned that. Yeah, my senior year of college, I lived with some friends, including my friend Katie, who's actually now an amazing filmmaker. She had a huge jar of Nutella, and I used to every single night steal a little spoonful and eat it just as a snack. And it got to the point where I felt really guilty that I had been, you know, stealing her food. So I took a deep breath one night and told her, you know, admitted what I had been doing. And she was so relieved, which I thought was so funny because she thought she had been, you know, waking up in the middle of the night eating it, or, you know, she didn't know where it was going. And I remember being scared to tell her, and then we just had a good laugh about it.
Oh, that's good. And yeah, Nutella's worth getting up in the middle of the night for. Sneaking a bite here and there. We're talking to Julia Tertian about her book, Now and Again, Go-To Recipes, Inspired Menus, and Endless Ideas for Reinventing Leftovers. It's a concept that got us so excited we talked the publicity people into giving us Julia 2 weeks before the publication date on September 4th. You can join the conversation on The Exchange. What are the things that you have done with food you've got hanging around from a previous meal and turned them into something new and exciting? Does the grilled chicken from a couple of days ago become a component in a chicken salad tonight, for example? Join us on The Exchange with your thoughts, comments, questions at 800-838-3760 on the phone. Emails go to jx@jeffnet.org. I want to back up a little further into the autumn section to the one of the other meals you have here, the Sunday morning Bangladeshi breakfast, and coconut chutney sounds so exotic. First, though, what is chutney?
Sure. I mean, chutney is I think a big umbrella term that a lot falls underneath, and to me, it's a condiment or a sauce that in my mind is usually something that has a lot of flavor and isn't, you know, totally smooth. It's got some texture to it. So you can have, you know, everything from a mango chutney to a tomato chutney. And this is a chutney made with coconut and cilantro.
Okay. And so what does it take to make this particular chutney?
Yeah, it sounds probably a lot harder than it actually is. And it's no different than making, if you've ever made pesto from scratch, the way I make this chutney is I put fresh cilantro, a little bit of fresh ginger, and a little ground cumin, and then some dried flaked coconut. And I put that all into a food processor and just pulse it till it's finely chopped. You could do that by hand, too, if you'd like. And then I, instead of, you know, the way you would add olive oil to basil and pine nuts to make pesto, I just add coconut milk to this mixture. And it's so delicious, and it's, there's no cooking. It's just really chopping or letting your food processor chop it up. It's so easy, and it makes something, you know, as sort of, you know, mundane, I would say, as scrambled eggs, just a really interesting, delicious dish. And yeah, I serve it right on top of scrambled eggs, but it's good on everything.
And you eat a lot of scrambled eggs, you admit, in the book.
I do. Yeah, my wife and I eat them, I would say, almost every single morning. They're cheap and good, and we live near a lot of people who have chickens, so we get to buy really good eggs, and I love them.
Okay, yeah, a lot of scrambled egg consumption in our house as well, so right with you there. One of the other items on the Bangladeshi Sunday morning breakfast is a mango with cardamom syrup and pistachios, which again is really intriguing. What's involved in making this syrup?
Sure, yeah. Also, again, something that might sound a little, intimidating, but it's so simple. And I love the flavor of cardamom. If you've ever enjoyed like a chai latte, that's one of the predominant flavors. And so I just get cardamom pods, which are pretty easily available, and crack them, which I just do by you know, giving them a little crush with my, you know, the palm of my hand. And then you put them in a saucepan with a little bit of sugar and water, and just let that simmer for a few minutes. And it makes just this delicious syrup that has so much flavor. And, you know, it's just as good drizzled on the fresh mango as, you know, I say to do in the book as it is, you know, you can mix it into a glass of iced tea. You know, it's a great thing to have on hand.
There's a picture that that your photographer David took of drizzling the cardamom syrup onto the mangoes and pistachios, and I just wonder about how long it takes to shoot these things. First of all, are you involved in the whole process? Is it all stuff you're preparing that ends up in the pictures?
Yeah. It's such an interesting thing to take photos for a cookbook. It's fascinating, and I think a lot of people don't realize just how much work it is involved. So every single photo in this book we took in my home, and my hope was for the book to really feel like it's coming from my kitchen to yours, because, you know, it truly is. And so the way it worked was I hired two awesome women, Tina and Caro, and there's a picture of all of us in the back of the book with David, the photographer. And, you know, I had written the whole book, I had tested all the recipes, and then they came to my house. And we just spent a week all cooking, you know, pretty much every recipe out of the book. And I had a friend, Becca Bartoszewski. She's a great prop stylist. She helped me find, you know, I have lots of plates and bowls and silverware, and I collect lots of stuff. But she helped me kind of fill out the collection a little bit. And then we just had the most fun week of cooking this stuff, picking out, you know, a beautiful plate to put it on. And David would snap a picture. And he's great to work with for many reasons. You know, he's so talented. He's a really nice and really fun guy. But he's also incredibly fast. And he takes the picture, you know, basically as soon as you put the plate down, the picture is shot. And I spoke to him one day because I've worked on lots of books and with lots of photographers, and he was by far the fastest. And he said to me that he thinks, you know, food's not going to get better looking the longer it sits, which I thought was so true. But it really takes a real, you know, skilled person with a good eye to know, you know, the right angle and, you know, where the light is best in the room at that moment. You know, and he's got such a great sensibility for all that.
It is not a book to read when you're hungry, because you will only get hungrier, I can tell you that much. Julia Tershin's our guest. We're talking about her book, Now and Again. It's a cookbook about reinventing leftovers in great new ways. There's a section here where the meal is actually called Card Night Enchiladas, and boy, I'm going to get a reputation here for my eyes going straight to the booze recipes, but garlicky shrimp with tequila and lime just sounds fascinating.
Yeah, that menu it's one of my favorites because it's very much about three of my best friends and these meals we have together all the time where we usually play a round of cards. And, we usually have a bottle of tequila and some limes nearby to make ourselves drinks. So that's where that recipe came from. And if you've ever cooked, you know, shrimp in a pan with some garlic and splashed it with, you know, white wine and maybe some lemon to make like a scampi, this is no different. It's just using a little bit of lime instead of lemon and tequila instead of white wine. And I put a handful of chopped fresh cilantro on top, you know, where you might ordinarily find parsley. And it's sort of a, I would say a Mexican-inspired scampi.
And then so what is the It's Me Again? What's the reincarnation of the garlicky shrimp?
Yeah, you know, it's so funny because some of the It's Me Agains, you know, I don't always have leftover shrimp. I tend to eat them all. But this is a good one to make sure you keep on hand, because the idea for the leftovers here is to chop up those leftover shrimp, mix them with a handful of chopped up kimchi, if you like kimchi, which I love, and you make them into little pancakes mixed with a really simple batter of eggs and flour and salt, and they're delicious, kind of savory pancakes that are great to have like with a little, you know, cocktail or something like that, or a beer. You know, it's like a really great, almost like a fritter.
I was going to ask, pancakes and fritters do seem to be fairly common occurrences in the book.
Yeah, they're one of, I think, the best ways to, you know, use up leftovers is to turn them into a little crispy, you know, something. And I just love them. So, but yeah, they do appear here and there.
And give us a little sidebar here about whether you consciously try to hit all parts of the palate in your meal planning.
Yeah, that's such a thoughtful question. I think I definitely do. I think I try to include something that's, you know, something a little sweet at the end, and the rest is quite sort of like savory and salty. And, you know, I try to incorporate, you know, a good amount of acid so you get that nice sour, you know, flavor and sort of feeling. And I'm someone who really loves the sort of taste and feeling of bitter food, you know, things like, you know, radicchio, which is, you know, that beautiful, you know, I hate to call it a green because it's not green, but vegetable, broccoli rabe, things like that. I love that kind of stuff. And, you know, I try to think about flavor. I try to think about texture, you know, making something really crispy or adding a chopped nut or something like that just to give a little extra texture wherever I can. And, you know, just a balance all around, a balance of dishes and just, you know, to create a really nice feeling for your meal.
It is, again, about more than just the eating. It's also about the company you get to keep with a meal. It's very important to the work of Julia Tertian. She is our guest on The Exchange, talking about her cookbook, Now and Again. Go-to recipes, inspired menus, and endless ideas for reinventing leftovers with Lavish Photography by David Loftus. You can join the conversation on The Exchange, share some recipes with us by phone or by email, or ask some questions of Julia and her processes. She has learned a lot over the years in the kitchen, and she's sharing it with us. And you can join us on The Exchange by phone or email when we come back to The Exchange in a minute 20. Final segment on today's Jefferson Exchange. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. We are trying to rehabilitate the public opinion of leftovers in the hour of the Jefferson Exchange. We're spending with Julia Tertian, who's the author of a book called Now and Again. Go-to recipes, inspired menus, and endless ideas for reinventing leftovers. If you've been dragging around your whole life thinking, I don't want to have that again, think again, because there are lots of things you can do with the food you've already presented in a meal that you can turn it into something new and different. And Julia really walks us through some fairly easy to execute recipes in the whole process of the book, divided up by meals and by seasons as well. You can join the conversation on The Exchange. You have some things to share about meals you've prepared or turned around into something different. Let's hear about those or ask questions of Julia at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email. It's jx@jeffnet.org. Okay, we mentioned dividing by seasons. We're actually still in the autumn section of the book, the first section. The first holiday meal is a Rosh Hashanah dinner, and I wonder what challenges you feel about the general predictability of holiday meals.
Sure, yeah. I mean, I'm of two minds. I would say the predictability in some ways is really what makes for traditions. And, you know, certain things people look forward to every year on a holiday are what make that holiday really special. And I think sometimes I think that's a nice thing to lean into, and you don't have to, you know, reinvent the wheel. And on the other hand, I think it's okay to, you know, subvert tradition and, you know, to make things simpler. Or if, you know, there's something your family always serves, but no one actually really enjoys it, you know, there's no need to keep making it. You can make something else.
I didn't realize there's a food actually associated with Rosh Hashanah. What is that?
It's apples dipped in honey, and it's said to symbolize having a sweet new year, because Rosh Hashanah is the Jewish new year.
Ah, okay. And then how do you prepare the apples in the book?
Yeah, so I turn that idea of that pretty classic pairing, apples and honey, which, you know, I grew up with, into a really, really simple applesauce cake. And it's got a cream cheese and honey frosting, which is literally just cream cheese whipped together with honey. And it's so delicious and so simple. And it's such a nice cake. And it's, you just mix everything in one bowl. You know, there's no creaming of butter and sugar and, you know, alternating flour and all different things. It's just, you know, a real, what they call a dump and stir cake. And it's so simple to make, and, you know, a cake that's really great even if you want to make it a day or two ahead of time. You know, it's almost like a banana bread where it can really, you know, sit on your counter and it doesn't suffer. So I love that cake, and it's a nice nod to that tradition of apples and honey, but served in a way that's a little bit new, and I would say maybe a little bit more modern, but also just so easy.
Before we get to the dessert in that meal, though, there is a beet salad. This is a really visually fascinating dish. Beet salad with poppy seed and chive dressing. What goes into the preparation? Sounds like most of that is in the dressing.
Yeah, it's the whole thing is really, really simple. The beets are just very simply cooked. I just boil them in the recipe, and you peel them. You could roast them, too, if you prefer beets that way. And the dressing with the poppy seeds and chives is just a mixture of yogurt, but you could also use mayonnaise or sour cream, you know, anything kind of creamy, mixed with a little bit of olive oil and mustard and a little splash of apple cider vinegar. That's it. You just whisk it all together, add some poppy seeds and minced chives. And that combination of poppy seeds and chives is really delicious. And, you know, the poppy seeds add a little bit of texture. And it's also just really beautiful. It's a striking combination of those red beets and the kind of white dressing with the little, you know, black poppy seeds and green chives. And it's a great salad to serve for a party or for company because, you know, as opposed to a big, you know, bowl of you know, fresh lettuce, if you put dressing and it's going to wilt, you know, these beets can sit, you know, and stay really sturdy and fresh and juicy with that dressing. And, you know, you can make it totally ahead of time. And, yeah, it's beautiful and simple and healthy.
And the beet salad doesn't it's me again turn as beet dip. What makes the keys to the conversion there?
Yeah, so you basically just take whatever is left over, the beets, dressing, put it into a food processor and just, you know, press on, and that is it. And, you know, it turns this thing into a completely different texture. You can season it with a little extra, you know, a little bit of vinegar or lemon if it needs a little extra edge, and it's delicious. It's also incredibly healthy, and I find it's a great thing to serve for kids because kids love dipping things. Mm-hmm. I've learned just having a young niece, and it's also just such a beautiful color. It's that, you know, bright pink, and it seems, I think, especially for young individuals, sort of thrilling that you get to eat something that, you know, looks almost like a cartoon color.
It's a visual fascination in both of its incarnations.
Yeah.
Julia Tershin's our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. Her book on leftovers and turning them into something exciting and new is called Now and Again. And here's a call from Vince in Eugene. Welcome to the Exchange.
Hi there. My family background is actually Italian. I was born in Brooklyn and went to college at Stony Brook, Jeff.
Hi.
My sister lives in Westchester County, so it's a little bit of geography here. But my partner's from England, and the first time I went to visit his family in England with him, he said his mother was going to make bubble and squeak. And I laughed out loud because the name was so funny. And I said, what the heck is bubble and squeak? And he said, oh, she's going to take some leftover potatoes and mash them and put them in a frying pan, you know, with maybe, I don't know what she used there, but here I guess it would be like a Pam spray. And then put leftover vegetable in it and mash it down and make it into like a potato vegetable frittata. And I guess during the Depression and World War II, they had to use everything. And I think a lot of recipes from that era would probably be very popular to expand upon.
All right. Good point for that. Thanks, Vince, for sharing that with us. So let's talk about first the bubble and squeak. Do you have any, have you prepared that much yourself? Julia?
Oh, me. Sorry. I didn't know if he was still on the line. I have made that before, and I've actually spent a little time in England and really enjoyed it there. And I think, yeah, he brought up such a great example of, you know, turning leftovers into something kind of new again. And, you know, I think putting anything in a hot frying pan and giving it a little crispy edge is always a good idea.
Yeah, one of my favorites, too. But this tells us that there's a fair amount of tradition with repurposing leftovers.
Absolutely. I think, yeah, again, he brought up such a great point of, you know, especially during wartime and, you know, any time of economic depression or anything, just, you know, not having the option to, you know, waste any food or throw anything out. And I think when, you know, resources are limited, it does, I think one interesting effect is it inspires some creativity. And, you know, maybe you don't want to keep eating the same thing over and over, so you know, add a little of this or, you know, turn it into that, or, you know, the beets we were just talking about, just, you know, making them a whole different texture is a way of, you know, you're eating the same exact thing, but it feels like a completely different thing. And so, yeah, I think in times of any kind of scarcity, you know, we get to, in a way, I guess a good part of about that is we get to be quite creative.
Indeed, we do. So we've reached Thanksgiving in the book, and I am a stuffing fanatic. That is one of the things I will eat for days and days. And yeah, generally stick in a frying pan. What's your stuffing recipe though? What are some of the keys to it?
Yeah, so I'm with you. I love stuffing. And, you know, when we were talking earlier about holiday meals, I think stuffing is such a good example of something that I think most people love. I think a lot of people, it's their favorite part of Thanksgiving. And I kind of feel like maybe that's because we don't really eat it so often other times of the year. And it's something that's really relegated to this one holiday. So we really look forward to it. And my stuffing recipe, which has some sausage and spinach in it, I think what makes it special is that you bake it on a sheet pan, you know, like a cookie sheet. Mm-hmm. And what that does is it increases your surface area, you know, as opposed to doing it in a small baking dish or anything like that. And what that means is pretty much every bite is almost like a corner bite, and you get that nice crispy top to it. And I'm someone who always loves, you know, the edge of something, the corner of something, you know, the heel of a loaf of bread. And to me, that's always the best part. So doing it in a sheet pan means, you know, every piece is kind of like that. But, you know, if you prefer it softer, you can absolutely just do it in a smaller baking dish.
So let's move on to winter now. And one of the meals that you provide here, I really want to hear about the skillet cornbread with cheddar and scallions.
Mm. Yeah, that meal, the cornbread is from a meal that includes it's a chicken and bean chili, and it's a meal that I often make for my parents when they come over for lunch. So my parents live about an hour and a half away from me and my wife, and it's the perfect lunch distance because they can drive up and, you know, stay for a while and then, you know, get back in time to walk their dog. And I love that cornbread, and you cook it straight in a cast iron pan that you heat up first in the oven. And again, I feel like all I've talked about is crispy edges to things, but that really hot pan gives that cornbread such a beautiful crust. And yeah, it's full of cheddar cheese and scallions, so it's got, you know, this wonderful kind of like cheesy, oniony taste, and it's great. I love it.
So how does that get turned into something new? This is really fascinating.
Yeah, well, this also relates to what we were just talking about. So the cornbread, if you have any left over, can turn into a wonderful stuffing. So you mix it with some cooked onions, and you know you could do a little celery or peppers, and just put a little stock and eggs the way you would make a bread stuffing, and just bake it, and you know serve that with a really simple roast chicken, and you know, a pretty ordinary thing becomes, you know, a really exciting meal. And yeah, it's a great way to use up any, you know, leftover cornbread or any bread, especially if it's been sitting around for a couple of days and if it gets like a little stale. You know, most people would think, you know, it's gone bad. And to me, that just means it's going to absorb even more flavor. So it's, you know, it's a great thing to use.
So you don't think of it as going bad. It's just it's a new stage in its development.
Yeah, I think unless food really, you know, if there's mold on anything like that, you know, I don't want anyone getting sick. But I think for the most part, you know, you can, you know, hold on to something and turn it into something new.
So there's a later meal that involves charred broccoli with capers and lemon. We're always looking for new ways to prepare broccoli at our house. So how do you do the charring?
Yeah, you just do it in a super hot oven or under your broiler. And I love it. It's, you know, I think sometimes we forget that broccoli has a lot of kind of inherent sweetness. And when you cook it in a super hot oven, all of that natural kind of sweetness gets, you know, caramelized, and it's delicious. And adding that just little bit of char, I think, you know, sometimes broccoli, I feel like people get, you know, really kind of bored with it, or, you know, if you just have it boiled or steamed, which there's nothing wrong with that, but it can get a little, you know, one note. And charring it, you know, it's sort of sweet and tender on the inside, but it's got this, you know, nice texture and a little depth of flavor, and it's great. And mixed with some capers and lemon, it takes that kind of deep roasted flavor and sort of just, you know, brightens it with these, you know, nice, bright, tart flavors. And it's a great dish and super easy.
And anybody who's been listening for more than a few minutes knows that there's probably going to end up in some kind of a pancake or fritter in its second incarnation.
You got it. Yeah, little broccoli fritters, which are delicious.
So the whole newsroom wants to know about the boozy lemon slushies.
Mm. Yeah, those are great. So those come in a meal that's full of seafood and a spaghetti with scallops and all sorts of stuff. And it's a really beautiful way to end the meal. And yeah, could not be easier. So you get a container of lemon sorbet, whatever brand you like, and let it sit out a little bit so it's a little bit soft. And then you just put a big spoonful in the bottom of, you know, you could use a champagne glass or a wine glass or, you know, a mug, whatever you want. And you add a little bit of vodka and you mix that together. and then top it off with some sparkling wine. And it's sort of, you know, a mixture of dessert and kind of after-dinner drink. And yeah, it's wonderful, and it feels very kind of celebratory and special, which I like a lot.
As we move into springtime, I wanted to zero in on one particular recipe for the Healthy Happy Wife Cake. There's a story behind this recipe.
Yeah, so in my first cookbook, Small Victories, which came out a couple of years ago, I did a recipe for something I called the Happy Wife, Happy Life Cake, named because it's my wife Grace's favorite cake. And it's a really simple chocolate cake that's got, it's two layers and has raspberry jam in between, and then this chocolate and sour cream frosting, which is melted chocolate mixed with sour cream, and that's it. And it's the best chocolate frosting in the world. And it's a great cake. I love it as much as she does. But in the interim, you know, between that book and this book, she was actually diagnosed as an adult with type 1 diabetes, and it very much changed, you know, what she eats, what we eat, you know, how we prepare food in our home, and it means she pays a lot more attention to things like sugar and, you know, the amount of carbohydrates and things. And so I developed, what I call the Healthy Happy Wife Cake, which is a version of that original cake, but it's much lower in sugar and carbohydrates, but it's still a delicious chocolate cake, and it's something she can eat with a bit more ease now that her, you know, health has changed and her, you know, dietary restrictions have changed. But it's, what I love about it is that anyone can enjoy it, you know, no matter what your circumstances.
Right. You don't have to just be on a restricted diet to get there.
Exactly.
All kinds of great stuff in the book and ideas for not only how to prepare leftovers, but also how to get to the meals that you'll make leftovers from Julia Tertian, with photographs by David Loftus. The book is called Now and Again, Go-To Recipes, Inspired Menus, and Endless Ideas for Reinventing Leftovers, on sale September 4th. Julia, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me. It was so fun to talk with you.
It's been a pleasure.